It is late night, right here, Sports Radio, WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys, as we've got a full four-hour program tonight, making our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. We'll do some Celtics tonight, start the show. Celtics, as their game just wrapped up about 15 minutes ago. We will get into the Patriots coming up in a little while on the program as well. I mean, look, we talked at nauseam last week about the heading into the Dolphins game. We were together again Monday night, still continuing to break down what happened in that Dolphins game, sort of come together and just try to get over it. And now it's time to start looking forward to what's going to happen this coming weekend. It's just a critical game for the Patriots. We'll start to look forward to what we can expect from this team. Good news on the injury report today. Just a couple of guys on the report, but the fact is they were full participants. But what I do want to get into as well, and you guys heard Ben Volen and Butchie touch on this a little bit earlier in their program, but it's a story worth talking about, because today on WEI.com, there's two stories, not one, but two, where pretty visible, you know, guys around the NFL that people know, recognize, and respect, both Warren Moon and Mike Lombardi, were critical of the Patriots and or Tom Brady. You know, not a good day when it comes to national news around your Patriots, and the confidence level nationally for this team, I feel like, is at an all-time low. And that surprises me, because we saw this team really right the ship in the middle part of the season. And I'll give you guys more statistical evidence as to why I feel like Warren Moon is way off. I feel like he's sort of desperate right now, looking for attention, looking for headlines. And there's an easy way to look for headlines. An easy way to get those headlines is when you say something about a guy like Tom Brady. If you mention Tom Brady in a negative way, if you mention Aaron Rodgers in a negative way, LeBron James in a negative way, these are the types of guys that generate that sort of publicity, that sort of buzz. And when you put a headline on Twitter and you link it to an article, it's going to get clicks. So we've got a problem here, because I get evidence here, statistical evidence, that supports what I've been saying for the better part of the last 2 months, is that Tom Brady, to me, is exactly the same player as the guy that we've seen in years past. It's an easy story to write. He's 41 years old. The Patriots haven't been as good this year. We know that. And for whatever the reason, and I told you guys on Monday that again, I feel like this team is going to be fine. I feel like they're going to be a threat in the playoffs. They'll have as good of a chance as anybody to advance not only to the AFC Championship game, but to the Super Bowl, because I feel like they're getting healthy and they're getting right at the right time. And I have a hard time taking what happened in Miami to heart. I really do, because that's been such a nightmarish place for this Patriots team to play, regardless of how dominant the Patriots have been over the course of the last 18, 19 years. It doesn't make a difference which edition of the Patriots it was, which era of this Patriots dynasty. They all struggle in Miami. So why am I going to write my final opinion on this Patriots season, this Patriots team, based on a fluky one-point loss in Miami? I can't do it. And I feel like a lot of people have rushed to judgment. A lot of people have jumped off that bandwagon, so to speak, and they're ready to bury this team. Somewhere, Max Kellerman is smiling. And to me, that's not the story here. It's not. The fact is this, you know, when you lose your binky, when you lose your best player, when you lose somebody that really matters to you, the fact is it's going to hurt you statistically. And if you look at Tom Brady's numbers this year and compare them to the last time that he had Julian Edelman, okay, so you go back to Julian Edelman's last season here with the Patriots, where they won the Super Bowl, right? They won the Super Bowl. But if you take Brady's numbers post-Edelman return, so Brady's numbers week 5 and week 5 on, they're exactly the same as what they were when Brady had Edelman 2 years ago. I'm talking about a completion percentage, 66% both times. 66.3% right now, 66.1% then. You're talking about passing yards per game, 286 then to 309 now, so that's better. Yards per attempt, 7.9 then, 8.1 now. And your touchdown to interception ratio, 4.0 then, 3.5 now. So the point is this, he's virtually the same player since getting his binky back. You know, it's hard to sit here if you're in the national media and continue to generate headlines, But again, the easy way to do it is to bring up Tom Brady, is to bring up Tom Brady in a negative light, is to say something sort of quote-unquote controversial. And it shouldn't be controversial when a guy that's 41 years old is being criticized, right? I mean, the fact is he's 41 years old, and he's supposed to take some heat, especially because of the way that he has publicized the TB12 method and the fact that he makes money off of it and it's his own business. And he's talked about playing until he's 45. On more than one occasion, he's talked about wanting to play till he's 50. You know, this is all part of the TB12 marketing program. It's all part of the TB12 marketing scam. It really is. I mean, he wants you guys to believe, that's being Tom Brady and Guerrero, they want you guys to believe that we can live forever if we just follow Tom Brady's dietary guidelines. And that's just not the truth, right? We know that. We're not going to look like Tom Brady at 41 years old. We're not going to behave like Tom Brady at 41 years old, and we won't be able to throw a football like Tom Brady at 41 years old. It's just not going to happen. Not only is he in great shape physically and psychologically, not only does the TB12 method work for him, but he has been a world-class athlete for the better part of the last 20-plus years, right? So that's not us, but that's part of the TB12 marketing program, marketing scam, where, hey, if you spend X amount of dollars a month and you buy into the program, you too can look like you're 22 at 41 years old, just like Tom Brady. And I don't blame him. I mean, that's sales. He's setting up his post-playing career. Good for him. But because he's put himself out there, because he sold books, he sells apps, because he's got the TB12 centers that he's talked about envisioning popping up all around the country when he's done playing, right? Because of all of those reasons, he's going to attract a little bit more heat, a little bit more attention when the numbers aren't quite what they should be, when your eyes tell you that maybe he's not as effective as he used to be. But the numbers back up my claim here that he really hasn't lost a step, that you can pinpoint his issues this year predominantly to the fact that his receiving core is unfamiliar to him when he started the season. Again, losing Danny Amendola, losing Brandon Cooks, having to work up to week four without Julian Edelman, and then when Edelman comes back, you've got to work him back into the offense, it being a year plus since he last played. I mean, you've got the situation here where you bring in a guy, it hasn't played more than, what, six games in the last 5 years in any given season? And you know, you got the situation where not only is he psychologically broken, he's sort of physically broken too with the hamstring, and you've got to work this freakish athlete back into your program. He's got to learn the offense. All these things have to happen. They've got to take place, and they've got to take place while this team is continuing to game plan and try to win games. It's a near impossible task. But as the season has gone along, and as everybody has got more comfortable with one another, and as Julian Edelman has started to round back into form, Tom Brady's numbers have rebounded. They have, to the point where they're identical since week five and Edelman's return to what they were the last time those two played together for a season, which is 2 years ago when this team won the Super Bowl. So we'll get into that with a little bit more detail. I've got the numbers to back up my claims sometime around midnight tonight, because we've got to spend time. You got two guys that are nationally known, nationally respected, Mike Lombardi and, of course, Warren Moon, sort of, I don't know, pouring cold water on the Patriots today. And I feel like it's easy to do that this week after what we saw last week. I feel like it's easy pickings for these guys. So they're going to go for it. Good for them. I surely hope the Patriots can continue to avoid the noise. I hope that they can continue to put what happened last week out of their heads, because last week's irrelevant. It really is at this point. You know, this team, they've got a job to do. They still control their own destiny. The number two seed is still critically important to them. That first round bye is still on the table, and it's still up for the taking if you're the Patriots. It absolutely is, isn't it? I mean, not for nothing. You go out there, you beat the Steelers, you're in very good shape. You truly control your own destiny. And look, so what? If the one seed's off the table, it's off the table. You got to do the best that you can do to finish with the highest seed that you mathematically can finish with. And for the Patriots, that is the number two seed. And they truly control their own destiny. And now you're going to start to get the heat this week. I promise you, with what Warren Moon came out with on the Ringer podcast today, and now Mike Lombardi coming out today and essentially saying that this Patriots team isn't all that good, saying that if they were to just make, not win, but just make the AFC Championship game, that this would have to go down as one of Bill Belichick's greatest seasons coaching ever. And you think about all the great teams that he's coached. You think about all the Super Bowl appearances that he's been a part of. You think about all the Super Bowl wins that he's been a part of. And Mike Lombardi isn't judging this edition of the Patriots in his mind based on winning a Super Bowl or even getting to a Super Bowl, not even winning the AFC Championship game. In Mike Lombardi's mind, success for this edition of the Patriots is defined by just making the AFC Championship game. I mean, expectations like that don't exist with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick here in New England. But Mike Lombardi, a guy that's been close to the program for many, many years, he says that when he looks at this team, he doesn't see a team worthy or capable of winning the AFC Championship game. So we'll talk about that coming up in a little while as well at 617-779-7937. We do have to get into the Celtics. This team is red hot. They've won seven consecutive games now, 17-10 on the season. Today, a good win, again, because this team is still shorthanded. You know, they were able to get Kyrie Irving back, and that's a big deal. Kyrie Irving played great tonight, you know, pretty average offensively for most of the game. And then in the fourth quarter and overtime, Kyrie Irving doing Kyrie Irving things, finishes with 38 points. And those back-to-back threes in the overtime, I mean, that is vintage Kyrie Irving, hitting big critical shots with the game on the line. He wants the ball in his hands. Now, that's exactly what he did in the finals for the Cavaliers. That's the type of player that Kyrie Irving is. And I feel like sometimes we need to be reminded of that here in Boston because we were robbed out of an opportunity to watch him in the postseason last year. So all we've really seen is regular season Kyrie Irving as a Celtic. And when the postseason comes around this year, assuming he's healthy, I feel like Celtics fans are going to be in for a huge surprise because Kyrie Irving is truly, not only is he one of the most elite players in the world, he's also one of the most clutch players in the world. He's a guy that when the game is on the line, when it matters the most, he elevates his game. And tonight he did it in multiple ways, not only hitting the threes, but also getting to the free throw line, a couple of critical defensive plays as well against this Wizards team that hasn't been right this season. So again, it's another win that the Celtics, quote unquote, should have had. But when you're down as many good players, down as many quality players as the Celtics continue to be down tonight, no Al Horford continuing to deal with tendonitis in that knee. He probably won't play on Friday. They're talking about possibly another three or four games off for Al Horford. Gordon Hayward, he was left home with an illness. They're trying not to spread that thing around. And Jaylen Brown also has an illness. So he was unable to go for the Celtics tonight. So again, this team shorthanded. Again, this team having to give quality minutes to guys that might not be ready for them but are coming through, like Robert Williams. Another nice performance from the rookie tonight. But it's Kyrie Irving with 38. Marcus Morris, is he an all-star? And you know, I feel a little bit stupid saying that. I never thought that Marcus Morris would be considered for an all-star game. I never did. He's one of those nice players. If you're going to make a deep playoff run, a James Posey type, a guy capable of hitting a couple of big corner threes, making some good defensive plays, a guy that's going to help you more than he hurts you, but not somebody that's capable of carrying the load. But that's exactly what this guy has done 90% of the season so far. I mean, he's been awesome game in and game out. He's been reliable game in and game out. He's been a guy that, quite frankly, when I look at him, I don't think the Celtics have any right to even consider trading him. He's got one of those funny contracts where if the right deal becomes available, yeah, he's a good guy to trade because the money's just right. It's right around $10-11 million, right? So when you add his contract to a couple of smaller ones, you can actually trade for a potential all-star. But when you look at the production that you're getting from him, and when you consider the expectations that are on this particular edition of the Celtics, you can ill afford to potentially trade him because I dare you to find somebody that you can bring back that is going to play better than how he has played this year. He has been phenomenal, and not just one-dimensionally phenomenal. It's not like he's been phenomenal at hitting the three. It's not like he's just been phenomenal at hitting free throws or phenomenal at defense. When the Celtics got him, he was known as the quote-unquote LeBron stopper. They brought him in as a nice, decent little offensive player to bring some offensive punch off the bench, but to be a guy who's got the body, who's got the legs, the arms, the weight behind him, the size, to possibly defend a LeBron James in the playoffs. That was the role that the Celtics envisioned for him when they brought him in last year. They never, ever envisioned him being the Celtics' most consistent offensive player through the first quarter of a season. But that's exactly what he's been. And he's been dominant when he's had to be. Meaning when the Celtics are down key players, he's a guy that steps up. He's a guy that's not afraid to step up, and he's not afraid of the moment. So as of right now, if the NBA All-Star game were this weekend, it would be a crime if he were not on the All-Star team for the Eastern Conference. It would be an absolute sin, an absolute crime. And I don't think he's on the ballot, but I hope – I'll check in the break. But I hope that the fans write him in. I hope the coaches get him in there. I hope that there's a way to celebrate and recognize the sort of season that he's had thus far, because he has been as critical for this Celtics team as anybody named Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, or Jason Tatum. He's been just as important as any one of those guys. We'll talk about the Celtics. Marcus Morris, 27-9 tonight, and Marcus Smart, 18 points, 5-3 tonight. And he got every single one of those 50-50 balls when the Celtics needed them the most. This guy, again, he is just a championship-type player on a championship-type team. You know, I'm not saying this Celtics team is a championship team this year, but if you're going to win a championship, you need a guy like him, a guy that's willing to come in and be that utility knife, be a guy that tonight he played three positions. He played the point guard, the shooting guard, and the small forward for extended minutes tonight. And he comes away with 18-5-3. And 100% of the 50-50 balls. He was simply outstanding tonight. This Celtics team, I'm trying to temper my expectations and temper my excitement, because I look at the level of competition that this team has played throughout this 7-game winning streak, and it's hard to allow yourself to go there when you look at the level of competition. It just hasn't been the best, right? It's been mediocre at best, and there's been some bad teams in there as well. You look at this Wizards team, they were certainly picked to be a playoff team when the season started. They're not right now. But with that sort of talent, you can see why it's a disappointment that they're not currently a playoff team. They've still got John Wall. They still have Bradley Beal, Kelly Oubre, Jeff Green, Austin Rivers. I mean, they're a team with some talent. They just haven't been able to put it together so far this year. But still, for this Celtics team to go in there, as shorthanded as they are, and go into a relatively hostile environment in D.C., have to come back from an 11-point deficit in the second quarter. The third quarter, the Celtics simply dominated, coming all the way back, grabbing themselves an 11-point lead of their own. Eventually, this thing goes to overtime, and the Celtics simply outstanding in the overtime, coming away with this 130-125 victory. By the way, 130 points, another game where this team goes north of 115. That's now six out of their last seven games. And the only game they missed that magical 115 mark was their last game. It was a win, but they only scored 113 points. So when you guys look at this 7-game winning streak, does it matter? And I think that that's really the road I want to go down with you guys tonight, because you know me. I mean, I'm the number one green teamer here. I look at this team, I look at this winning streak, and I have visions of winning 16 in a row in my head like last year, right? That's what I'm picturing. That's the excitement level that I'm starting to generate within myself, and I don't want to be let down. I was so let down to start this season, that 10-10 start. And it wasn't just the record, it was the way this team was playing. I had to come on the radio, and I did it, I don't know, for like a week straight, and I said the worst part about this year's edition of the Celtics, not only are they disappointing, not only are they not living up to expectations, they weren't playing hard, they weren't playing that Brad Stevens type of basketball. Your pace and space, your great transition offense, they weren't doing that. They weren't sharing the ball. It didn't seem like these players that we thought would be willing to make personal sacrifices turned out to be willing to do so. And the worst part of it all was I had to tell you guys they weren't fun to watch. And that kills me, because I'm the biggest Celtics fan going. I've been enjoying watching Celtics games for as long as I can remember. And this year, for a stretch, it was painful to watch these games. And not just because of the outcome. I watched every single one of those games during the ML Carr era, all right? I watched every single one. I don't mind the losing. I watched every single one of the games during Brad Stevens' first season here. I don't mind the losing. I really hated the way the Celtics were losing those games. And suddenly something's clicked, something's changed. They insert Marcus Smart into that starting lineup. They are 7-0 since inserting Marcus Smart into that starting lineup. That cannot be a coincidence, but does it matter? When you look at this team, seven consecutive wins, they're now just one game behind Philadelphia and behind the Bucks for second place in the Eastern Conference, four games behind Toronto for first place, but just three in the loss column. And look, they're right there. They're knocking on the door. They're right on the precipice of getting back up into that upper echelon of the Eastern Conference. Despite all the BS, all the issues, everything this team went through, they are literally knocking on the door of the number two seed in the Eastern Conference with plenty of time to work their way up to number one. So I wonder from you guys, and that's what I want to get to before we get to the Patriots, is seven games in a row, right? Are we getting excited about this team? Does this team start to feel like last year's team? Is this a team that, I don't know, the NBA pundits, NBA experts that sort of jumped off their bandwagon after picking them to represent the Eastern Conference in the finals. After their tough start, it seemed like everybody dumped the Celtics and jumped on the Raptors bandwagon. No longer did you turn on ESPN. No longer did you turn on Fox Sports and hear about the Celtics as a potential Eastern Conference champion, a potential target for the Golden State Warriors to potentially play in the NBA Finals. Suddenly, everybody that considered themselves an NBA quote-unquote insider, an NBA pundit, was picking the Raptors. The Celtics were out of the picture. Does 7 wins in a row against mediocre competition, is that enough to lift the Celtics back up in their minds and in your minds as a potential team to represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals? Are they right back to where they should have been? Have they erased all of the issues that really sent them down a pretty dark path to start the season? I want to believe that they have, and I want to believe so badly that this team has healed all of those wounds, and now they're on track to be the team that we thought that they could be. But then I look at the schedule, and I look at the teams that they beat, and I can't allow myself to go all the way there just yet. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937.
What did you think about the way you guys resilient in overtime? Marcus Smart with 2 offensive rebounds. Obviously, Kyrie hitting big shots.
Yeah, I mean, those last 2 shots were amazing. The one in front of our bench was a joke. How tough that was, and he made it look easy. Kyrie, and then the 2 Smart rebounds. But this team's hard to put away. They just lower their head, go downhill. We were super small at the end, and that hurt us on defense, I thought. Guys just kind of found a way. And so, that was a positive.
Celtics head coach Brad Stevens right there. And we'll hear more from Brad as the program rolls along tonight in his post-game sort of press conference, his meeting with the media. And look, he tries to hold back his level of excitement, but you know Brad Stevens has to be feeling very good about this team because he was the one that was ultra critical of this Celtics team when they were floundering and when they hit that 10-10 mark, and really they didn't look anything like the team that we expected them to look like this year. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. Opening the program tonight, talking about the Celtics, who had a great win tonight on the road in D.C. against the Wizards. Your final score, 130-125. And it's an overtime win for this team. It was a comeback win for this team. And this team was shorthanded once again tonight. And not just shorthanded, you know, missing a couple of, you know, bench pieces. No, this team continues to be shorthanded, missing legit all-star type talent. No Gordon Hayward. He's out with an illness. No Jaylen Brown, also out with an illness, and no Al Horford tonight. Al Horford continuing to deal with tendonitis in that knee. The Celtics saying he could be out another 3-4 games. Brad Stevens saying that he's being very cautious with Al Horford right now because they want him healthy for the stretch run of the season. So when you look at this team and you look at this 7-game winning streak, there's 2 factors that we have to take into consideration here. There's where this team came from, meaning hitting that 10-10 mark, just not looking anything like the team that we expected them to be, not playing Brad Stevens-type basketball. The offense looked absolutely lost and abysmal out there. They fell into this bad, bad habit of playing hero ball. And even on the games that they won during that opening 20-game stretch where they went 10-10, they won a lot of those games because Kyrie Irving was the best player on the floor, and he was playing hero ball because that was the only option that this team had. And now suddenly throughout this 7-game winning streak, they're back to passing the ball effectively. They're back to great transition offense. They're back to quote-unquote pace and space. Throughout the course of this 7-game winning streak, the Celtics have had the number 1 ranked offense in the NBA. And before tonight, the Celtics were going into tonight as the number 3 ranked defense in the NBA throughout this stretch. So I'll check the stats tonight to see if that improved at all. They did give up 125 points in overtime, so they're probably still right around number 3 overall throughout this stretch. So again, in the 7-game stretch, number 1 in offense and number 3 in defense. Number 1 also when you look at the differential between them and their opponents. So this has been a great stretch for everybody on this Celtics team, going all the way down to the rookie in Robert Williams, who's been forced into action because of the injuries to Aaron Baines, who did come back and play tonight, but he had been out for a few games because of the injuries to Al Horford, and because of Gershon Yabusele, who was ahead of him, ahead of Robert Williams on the depth chart. Robert Williams, literally the last center available, unless you include Marcus Smart, who played the five tonight as well. But literally, the last center available has been thrust into action over the last couple of games, and he has been impressive. So I look at this Celtics team and I say, okay, have they righted the ship? Is this team back on track? Are they the team that we thought that they were going to be? It is Sports Radio WEI, room for you at 617-779-7937. Let's get out to the phones. Let's go to Hunter. Hunter's in Richmond. And I heard from my producer, Hunter, that you're just leaving the game.
Yeah, man, we just got out of the game.
That's awesome.
We're on the way, all the way back to Richmond, VA.
Awesome, awesome, man. So I got to ask you first, watching the game on TV, it sounded like there was a tremendous number of Celtics fans in the house tonight.
Oh, yeah, it was 75% Seas fans for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But I guess Boston fans always travel well. Like, I've been to a bunch of Orioles games down here. They always seems like they outdraw the Orioles fans every game I've been to.
Well, they generally do. So the Orioles, you can get a cheap seat. Fenway's very expensive. Fenway's hard to get into.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a relatively easy drive or train ride. Put it this way. I fly every week for my day job, and 90% of my flights go through Baltimore. We're talking about a 45-minute flight from Manchester, New Hampshire. You know what I mean? So it's super easy and cheap to get to Baltimore if you're a Red Sox fan.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
So what'd you think of this game tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great road win. Like you said, we're missing some key pieces, and Hayward and Horford and Brown as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the three of them, we most likely would have blown them out. It got a little close for comfort there, obviously. John Wall was driving to the lane pretty much unstoppable.
When he
went down with that injury, I figured that was it for them, but then he came back in after like 30 seconds of rest.
And for as well as Robert Williams has played over the last couple of games for the Celtics, that's where the inexperience comes into play. John Wall took advantage of him a couple of times and really was able to get to the basket. And you got a 7-footer who blocks shots. You think that, you know, maybe he would intimidate a guy like John Wall, but no. That's why in Aaron Baines, who isn't nearly as athletic as a John Wall, he's so great at playing positional defense. He just knows where to be position-wise. And John Wall would never do that against an Aaron Baines, but he did sort of pick on the rookie a little bit tonight.
Yeah, John Wall's like fastest guy in the NBA.
Yep. So you live down there, right? So what the hell is wrong with this Wizards team, man? Because we read about them from up here, right? And this team still is stacked with talent. Any team that's got Bradley Beal and John Wall, you think that they would be at least a top 8 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they just look like a team that's completely fallen apart.
Yeah, I have no idea what's wrong with them. I mean, they, like you said, those two all-stars are always, they're always playing pretty well, honestly. Like, they never go through any prolonged slumps.
Nope.
I mean, if Dwight Howard would stop hanging out with trannies and, you know, things like that, they'd be a lot better.
Never, by the way, has a story been so salacious, so juicy, and disappeared so quickly. I don't know who Dwight Howard paid off, but that story sort of popped up, hit real quick on Twitter, and then disappeared.
Yeah, it did. Well, he's a rich dude. Like you said, he probably has enough money to pay off some news sources, perhaps.
Hunter, man, I appreciate the phone call, and thanks for giving me the perspective from down there in D.C. Drive safely back to your house in Richmond. It is Sports Radio WEI, room for you at 617-779-7937. Let's go to Mike. Mike's in North Providence. Mike, you're next up here on WEI.
Hi, Patrick. Yeah, I wanted to talk about Williams because, you know, I think he's really – these two games show that he's actually deserving of playing time. And maybe – you know, they'll end up going and saying, well, you know, Tice, you know, he's been here for a couple of years and, you know, going to give him a chance and going to develop the kid. But the reality is, the thing that impresses me the most is he's just not fouling people. And when you're a young player like him and you're just getting thrown out there like that, they're usually just, you know, fouling somebody every other minute. And he's been like that the whole time. I mean, it's not just these two games. He's been pretty much playing foul-free basketball every moment he's been out there in any sort of game action for the team. And another thing about him is being a lob target, his teammates need to get like some chemistry with him, and then it just takes off to a completely different level. I think you saw, like, with regards to Kyrie. Like, Kyrie tried to hook up with him once. It didn't work out. The second time, it's a alley-oop dunk. It's this sort of thing where, you know, they just have to kind of get used to him. and kind of have that little programming that, okay, if they leave him, throw it.
So you think
throw someone there with a rim and he'll dunk it in.
I mean, if you could whisper in Brad Stevens' ear then, Mike, are you suggesting that when everybody gets back and this team's got Horford, this team's got Aaron Baines actually healthy out there, that ankle's no longer a problem, that at least this guy in Robert Williams takes the place of, I don't know, Tice? Do you think he should take Tice's minutes?
I look at it this way. Maybe, but I think it's be more along the lines if Danny wants to do some sort of trade, he might be making like this sort of decision of saying, you know what, if I'm going to move like multiple guys, I got this guy to be the backup center. That sort of mentality for the, like, say, the second half of the season, already feeling more comfortable or confident that he'll be able to do it. Because I have to be honest with you, you know, the style of basketball player this guy is you know, the, right now you say like Clint Capella is probably the type that he could be. But
and by the way, look at how valuable Capella was last year and what he turned himself into.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I see this guy, the person that sticks out to me the most, the immediate thing, it's Russell. Bill Russell himself. I'm not saying he's going to be as great as Bill Russell.
You sounded like Tommy Heinsohn over there, Mike.
Well, but the thing is, he's about the same size. He's got the long arms. It's not just that he's springy. It's that he's fast and he's quick, and he's got those defensive instincts. He is really – he gets to where he wants to be. And I know that Wall took advantage of him a couple times. But guess what? That's John Wall, and that's the first time he's ever played against this guy. It's one of these things where – his ability to switch on to people, his ability to close distance, his ability to block shots, and not to mention he just seems really, really smart. I mean, maybe he's a little of a wing nut off of the court, but on the court, whenever I see him, he just seems to have a head for the ball, and he makes really, really good decisions for somebody as young as he is.
Well, Mike, that's a good point. That's something we're going to get to tonight. And listen, I appreciate the phone call, but I don't know much about this kid off the court. I know he's had a few off-the-court issues. I know that he didn't make a great first impression immediately following being drafted by the Celtics. He missed a plane. He was late to practice for the summer league. I mean, he had a few issues within his first couple of weeks of being here. But since then, he's been pretty much a model citizen. And on the court, now that we've got to see him play some extended minutes in games that matter, it's clear that this guy's got a high basketball IQ because he goes from not playing, literally not playing, going up and down to the D League, going up to Maine, back down to Boston, just to get some basketball action. I mean, that's essentially why the Celtics, you know, were sending him back and forth to Maine for a period of time because he needed to play. It had been so long since he actually played the game of basketball. So watching him play extended minutes the last couple of games, I see a guy that's got a very high basketball IQ, a guy that knows where to be position-wise defensively, and that's a hard thing to do. But I wouldn't go as far as to say that he's the next Bill Russell or that he reminds me of Bill Russell. I mean, that's going a bit overboard, Mike, but I understand the optimism. Clint Capella, I think, is a much more fair sort of comparison, a guy that I think when you look at Robert Williams, you look at his ceiling, Clint Capella is right about there. You know, that's a guy that he could potentially turn himself into in the not-so-distant future. Because quite frankly, if you're an NBA player and you come off the bench and you haven't played in weeks, essentially, at the NBA level, and you're able to contribute at the level that he's been able to contribute at the last couple of games, going for, what, 7-11-3 the last game out, and now tonight, 6-6-2. I mean, that's what you're getting from your rookie center. That's awesome. That's more production than this team ever could have imagined getting from Robert Williams at this early stage of the season, this early stage of his career. And what I really like about what they're getting from him is that they can count on him right now. It's not a surprise right now the way that they're running him out there. They're expecting good things from him. You can tell because his veteran teammates are setting him up in positions to succeed. Mike mentioned the back-to-back sort of lob opportunities for Robert Williams from Kyrie Irving. And one worked out, one didn't. But when you're Kyrie Irving, you're trusting the player that you're lobbing it up to, right? And you've got a guy now in Robert Williams that has that freakish type of athleticism. Somebody that the Celtics really haven't had. You know, somebody that can do otherworldly things on the basketball court with his body. You know, you sort of look at what he does and you say, oh my God, like one of those guys. Other teams have had guys like that. The Celtics really haven't. That natural shot blocker with the long arms. And he's an intelligent shot blocker, too. So many guys in the NBA today, and this goes to Mike's point about being somewhat in the same sort of cut from the same cloth as Bill Russell. And again, I'm not comparing him to that. That was Mike's comparison. But what Russell did so well was he'd block a shot and keep the ball in bounds. He prided himself in that. And if you notice Robert Williams, that's the effort that he tries to make, too. And so many of these young guys are more concerned about getting on SportsCenter and getting in somebody's face. So they block the shot with all this, you know, vigor and strength, and the ball goes rolling out of bounds, and all you've done is give the opposition the opportunity to set up a set play. Right? So really, is it a good play or not in that situation? But if you can block the shot, keep it in bounds, and give your team an opportunity to capitalize on a turnover, well, then now you're cooking with gas. And that's exactly what Robert Williams has provided this basketball team. So it'll be really interesting as guys start to get healthier. Aaron Baines, he came back from the sprained ankle tonight. Wasn't all that effective. You could tell the ankle's still not close to 100%, but as the days and weeks go on, you know that he will work himself back to being 100%. Al Horford's going to be out another 3 to 4 games, according to the Celtics, resting that knee. So you've got a situation here where I think Robert Williams will continue to get a limited amount of minutes, but once Aaron Baines is 100% and once Al Horford is back in 100%, on the depth chart, you got Horford, you got Baines, and you got Theis. So is there going to be room for Robert Williams? Has he earned himself a spot in this rotation? Does he deserve consistent minutes? And if so, who's got to go? Whose minutes are you giving up? I don't want to give up Daniel Theis's minutes. I love the way that kid plays, by the way. And I think Brad Stevens loves the way that Daniel Theis plays as well, because he's another one of these guys. He's a legit shot-blocking threat. He's a good rebounder. He's a good interior defensive player. But he's also somebody that's able to stretch out and hit the three. He's also got some playmaking abilities from the top of the key, like a Gordon Hayward. Not as good as a Gordon Hayward, but like a Gordon Hayward, allowing the Celtics team to set up their offense in the half court and not worry about him making bad decisions. And all those things are very valuable to a coach like Brad Stevens, whose offense is run so intricately. So I look at this team, and again, I still don't have the answers that I'm looking for. And with a four-hour show tonight, by the way, the only four-hour show of the week, we've got a quick two-and-a-half-hour show tomorrow following football, and then on Fridays, it's only 10 to midnight. So with the only full four-hour show of the week, I was really hoping to come out of here with a better understanding as to where this team is at, right? Is this a team that we're now going to start to invest our time, energy, love, and effort into like we did last year? Is this the team that we expected them to be coming out of training camp? You know, have they turned that corner 100%? Are the Celtics back? I think they are, but I'm not allowing myself to believe it just yet because I don't want to get hurt again. I look at this team, I look at the level of competition that they've been playing throughout this winning streak, and it doesn't really get me all that excited. You know, the wins get me excited. The style in which they've earned the wins gets me excited. The fact that they're blowing out some of these bad teams gets me excited. And anytime you win a game on the road in overtime, regardless of the competition, when your roster is as depleted as the Celtics roster is, well, then that's a damn good thing too. So I don't care that the Celtics didn't blow the Wizards out tonight. When you look at how depleted their lineup is, look at how depleted this team is right now. I give them a tremendous amount of credit. I don't care that the Wizards have been bad this year. How's that relevant to the conversation? When you're missing guys that, I don't know, are legit all-star type players, multiple guys at that level, then it's hard to get wins in the NBA. It's even harder to get wins in the NBA when you're not 100%. And this Celtics team is nowhere close to 100%. So that tells you something about the heart that this team has. It tells you something about the effort level that this team is now giving. But are Celtics fans convinced that the Celtics are back? Is that tough start now in the rearview mirror, and does it not matter anymore? You know, are we at the point now where we look at this team at 17-10, a game behind Milwaukee, a game behind Philadelphia for the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference, has all the damage that they had done to their fan base and to themselves throughout the first 20 games of the season, has that damage been undone over this 7-game winning streak? It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night, starting the program Celtics tonight. Eventually, we will transition, do some Patriots, do some Tom Brady. You got Warren Moon being critical of Tom Brady. You've got Mike Lombardi being critical of the Patriots. Both stories on WEI.com. We'll get to those coming up a little after midnight tonight, around 11:20 tonight. Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports, he will join us talking some Celtics. Until then, we'll take your phone calls at 617-779-7937.
Coach, what did you make of the atmosphere tonight? And at some points, it kind of seemed like you guys were back in Boston. It was a home game.
Well, I mean, first of all, this is always a great place to play. I mean, the playoff games here were incredible. And but when you're with the Celtics, and it's one of the things that you pinch yourselves about being with the Celtics, is Celtic fans travel. And when we played in Milan, Madrid, they were there. Mexico City, they were there. And so obviously in all 30 gyms in the United States, 29, and then Toronto, you'll see, at the very least, some green, usually a lot of green.
There's Celtics coach Brad Stevens in the postgame tonight talking about just how well you Celtics fans travel with this team. And I think I've talked about this on the program before, but you know, my friends and I have got two best friends since kindergarten, went to the same grade school together, high school together. Now we've all split up. We live in different parts of the country. I sort of stayed here in New England. My buddy Eric lives down in Miami as a news reporter, as a news anchor for a NBC affiliate in Miami. And my buddy Jason's a doctor in Virginia. And every year we try to leave our families for a long weekend, you know, leave the women, leave the children behind, and meet somewhere to... You know, the main event is watching a Celtics road game. And we are far from alone, you know, in our Celtics gear. There's always a good number of Celtics fans no matter where we go. You know, this year we're going to Orlando in January to see the Celtics play the Magic. We're also going to run the Disney Marathon that day. So that's going to be a fun weekend as well, and we're a little bit nuts for doing that. But I will say this, you know, I'm fully expecting a couple thousand people in Orlando to be wearing green. That's the way this Celtics team has always traveled, regardless of how good or how bad they've been. Now, Celtics fans are from Boston. They've moved all over the country, moved all over the world. But it's not just transplants from Boston. People have really joined on with this team and have fallen in love with this team, much like Lakers fans have, much like Red Sox fans have, much like Yankees fans have. They've got a global fan base, and the Celtics fans tonight, it was clearly audible, and it was visible. If you watched the game tonight, if you listened to the game tonight, you could hear the Celtics fans drowning out the Wizards fans, and that was something that was pretty awesome to watch and to see. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you at 617-779-7937. Starting the show, Celtics tonight. The Celtics with an impressive, impressive performance. And Kyrie Irving leading the way for the Celtics with 38 points. None bigger than the back-to-back threes in overtime tonight. And one of those threes was a good 30, 35 feet away from the basket. I mean, it was like right parallel to the Celtics bench. It was absolute insanity what this guy was doing out there. And then you read about him, right? And you continue to learn about Kyrie Irving. And in the last 24, 48 hours, you got Kevin Durant talking about Kyrie Irving, putting him in the same class offensively as Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, saying that he belongs right there with those two, two of the most dominant offensive players ever to play the game. Michael Jordan, probably the most offensively dominant player ever to play the game. And according to Kevin Durant, Kyrie not only belongs in that discussion, he is as good as those guys offensively. He belongs in that class. He is right there with them. And that gets me sort of intrigued, you know, for two reasons. A, I love the fact that one of Kyrie's contemporaries in the NBA, another elite superstar in the league, looks at him and puts him in that class. Because to me, that adds some legitimacy to what the Celtics are doing. If opposing players, if opposing superstar players look at a guy like Kyrie Irving and consider him in that class, well, then you know Kevin Durant can't be alone in that way of thinking. And if he really is a member of that class, if he really is that elite of an offensive player, then the Celtics are closer to a championship than I think a lot of people might assume they are. Right? Because to have one of those types of players as your cornerstone piece, your cornerstone franchise player, well, then maybe your team is legitimately close to winning a championship. So you got Kevin Durant coming out the last 24, 48 hours saying that, giving these sort of compliments to a Kyrie Irving. And then Kyrie goes out tonight and he puts it on full display with those 38 points and this that dominant offensive performance in overtime, simply willing the Celtics team to victory. It is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you at 617-779-7937. Let's stick with the phone calls. Let's go to Blair. Blair is in Maine. Blair, you next up here on WEI.
What a green team the Celtics are for going there and beating the Wizards, because the Wizards apparently are about, what, seventh place?
What, in the East right now? Well, no, I mean,
they're not very good right now. Yeah, I guarantee you that. Not as good as those Celtics are, because they're going to battle right through and be in first place by the end of this month, hopefully, towards Christmas. We'll be watching them on Christmas, and they're going to still be tearing it apart because we have Kyrie Irving back in the lineup, baby. What about those threes in the OT, baby?
He was phenomenal.
Oh, he was tearing those threes like no other. Swoosh, swoosh. I love it. I loved it. can't complain, right?
You can't complain, and that's the thing, Blair. When you watch a guy like Kyrie Irving, you know, and he takes over a game like this, this is what Cleveland saw in the finals. This is what LeBron James saw when he was a teammate of Kyrie Irving's in the finals. You know, these critical threes, the way that he single-handedly can take over a game. Yeah, he can go 1-on-5, literally. When you watch the stops and starts, when he gets to the basket, the Celtics really needing points, the ability to get to the free throw line. I think about Blair, and listen, I appreciate the phone call, I'm up against it. I think about last year in Game 7 against the Cavaliers. This is what the Celtics were missing, because it's not just the threes. The threes will get all of the attention because they were back-to-back, they were critical, they were back-breaking threes that Kyrie hit. But in the fourth quarter and in the beginning parts of that overtime, when the Celtics needed a basket, Kyrie's ability to change his pace offensively and the stop and start offensively, really just the deception and the speed, it's unmatched, it's unparalleled in the NBA. So he literally at times is going 1-on-4, 1-on-5 because he knows that he's either A, going to get to the basket and get himself a chance at a layup, or B, get to the basket and get some contact, which he's not afraid to get, and get to the free throw line. The Celtics didn't have that guy in Game 7 last year against the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals. And it was evident. And that's why guys like Terry Rozier were just continuing to jack threes, because as good as Rozier was for the better part of 2 months last year, and we've seen him this year, you know, continue to have those good moments, but for as good as he can be, and for as good as that team was last year throughout its postseason run, what did them in ultimately was the final 5-6 minutes of that Game 7. They became strictly a jump-shooting team. And what happens in the closing minutes of a playoff game? You get tighter, the defense gets better, and the Celtics didn't have any answers. They didn't have that guy that could break down his defender and get to the free throw line, stop the clock, and stop the momentum. Those things are critical, and they're critical, but nobody talks about them. Nobody talks about how important it is to stop momentum of the opposition. And getting to the free throw line does that. And you saw Kyrie do that on multiple occasions in the fourth quarter tonight as the Celtics, they had battled all the way back. They got themselves a decent lead, but then they gave up that lead to the Wizards. And every time the Celtics needed something creative to happen, they put the ball in Kyrie's hands. And you saw it with 7 minutes to go in the game. Brad Stevens had to go back to Kyrie a little bit premature, a little bit earlier than he would have wanted to in an ideal situation. But he had no choice, because that's the value that Kyrie brings. Not only somebody that's capable of giving you 30 points on any given night, but a guy that's capable of taking on the opposition nearly all by himself, right? Because he knows how to draw a foul. He knows how to use his body, sort of his speed, his body control, and English on the basketball to put himself in a position to get a layup where nobody thought a layup was even seemingly possible. I mean, it's stupid the way that he's able to go out there and do these things. And I think as the season's gone along too, remember when the season first started, you had Tommy Heinsohn saying that Kyrie looked overweight. I don't know if he was really overweight. Maybe he wasn't in the best basketball shape, but it's clear by now. I mean, he's in some of the best basketball shape he's ever been in. And if you listened to Kyrie in the offseason, and he talked about the surgery that he had to clean up the knee, he said that he felt like this offseason, after that surgery was done, he was as healthy, if not healthier now, than he's ever been. He put on a little bit of extra weight, but he said that was done on purpose because he bulked his body up in places he wasn't able to do it before. And I think now that we're, 30 games into the season, he's finally in a perfect position physically, because I'm looking at his speed, I'm looking at his leaping ability, his body control. And he's as dominant right now as I have seen him in a Celtics uniform, right? He reminds me of peak Kyrie in Cleveland right now. And that's an MVP-level player. So for the Celtics that have desperately needed him both at the beginning of the season to play hero ball and to get this team single-handedly out of their funk that they started the season with through their first 20 games, to now when they, you know what, they're paying him a lot of money to be a closer. They're paying him a lot of money to be a cornerstone franchise player. And that's exactly what he's behaved like throughout this 7-game winning streak. And especially in a game like tonight, where it matters the most, where you've put yourself in a position to win a game on the road in overtime. So it's games like this that I think are going to continue to build the character of this Celtics team. Don't forget, I mean, it's easy to look at this team and think to yourself, okay, you know, Kyrie's a vet, Hayward's a vet, Horford's a vet, but really, those guys haven't been available. So you've got Kyrie leading the way, but he's been out there with inexperienced guys, a rookie in Robert Williams, second-year guy in Jason Tatum, young guy in Terry Rozier. And somebody's going to lead the way for a team like that. And Kyrie has done a masterful job when he's been out there. None bigger, none better than what we saw from Kyrie Irving tonight, especially in overtime, doing it all for this Boston Celtics team. It is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. It's late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. As we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning, Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports covers the Celtics. You find him at Stool Greeny on Twitter. He'll join us coming up around 11:20 tonight. Also coming up in the next hour, I do want to get into what happened at the Garden a couple of nights ago when Anthony Davis came to town. I do. We've got to talk about the fact that you Celtics fans gave him a great, great ovation, and the fact that he's not white and you still gave him an ovation. Why has Bomani Jones not addressed this? Why has Bomani Jones stayed radio silent about this? It's Bomani Jones, after all, that said that you guys only cheered for Gordon Hayward when he came in with the Jazz because he was white. What did Bomani say? Gordon Hayward looks a lot more like Larry Bird than most of the other guys out there. He said, you know, and I know why those Boston fans want Gordon Hayward, implying that the only reason you Celtics fans wanted him here was because he was a white star in the NBA. Last time I checked, Anthony Davis is not white, and it seemed to me that you guys gave him a louder ovation than you gave Gordon Hayward. So we'll touch on that and the hypocrisy of a guy like Bomani Jones coming up in the next hour. Patriots football conversation comes your way after midnight tonight. All that and your phone calls tonight at 617-779-7937.
We have Kyrie Irving back in the lineup, baby. What about those threes in the OT, baby? Tearing those threes like no other. Swish! Swish! I love it.